Welcome back, everybody, to the Drink and Learn podcast. I am drinks historian Elizabeth Pierce.
And I'm bartender Abigail Gullo.
And today we are, we began by talking about our post-Mardi Gras choices. And I feel like, I took 2 days off and then like friends were in town and suddenly it was like one of those New Orleans nights. So it was definitely not a Lenten abstinence focused, whatever. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Mardi Gras or Lent. Mm-hmm. I guess there will be a mention of Lent because today we're talking about St. Patrick's Day and yes. Irish whiskey.
Very important. Very important.
And the thing that most people forget, or perhaps don't even know, depending on your experience with Catholic holidays, is St. Patrick's Day always St. Patrick's Day always falls during Lent, which is
I don't think there's any way it could not fall during Lent. Yeah,
I looked it up, and the most that it could fall is during Holy Week, which is the week leading up to Easter. So that is the latest that it could be if it's an early Easter. Mm-hmm. But Lent is a time of where Catholics, and well, actually some people aren't Catholic, but Catholics are meant to abstain from, certain pleasurable things, whether it's sugar or TV. Oh, Lee talked about that his family would give up TV as a family. And he was like, that was not a popular choice among the kids. And I was like, well, what else did you give up? He's like, I don't remember, but I just remembered that nobody wanted to give up TV.
It's very easy for me every year. I just give up hope.
Oh, Abigail. Well, I had a friend who gave up mixers. Brooke and Dale, that's y'all. But anyway,
that sounds like that goes along with giving up hope is giving up mixers.
A lot of people give up drinking. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, in the early celebrations of St. Patrick's Day, one did not drink. So a quick overview. St. Patrick is the patron saint of Ireland and is reputed to have brought Christianity to Ireland.
He was not Irish. He was a Romanized Briton. He was kidnapped by a chieftain in what is now Northern Ireland and forced to be a shepherd like by himself up in the mountains. And it was there that... Go wonder, God started speaking to him and told him that he needed to become a Christian. He escaped, went back to Romanized Britannia, found his whole family gone, and joined the church and studied in France. And he was in France for a long time, and he was like pretty happy and with himself, and thought himself a pretty cool priest, and was like, "Yeah,
that's his words,
I'm killing
right?
it." Yeah, he was like, "I'm totally killing it." And then God came back and was like, "Hey, yo, remember those people who kidnapped you? You need to go and convert them." And Saint Patrick was like, "God, no, oh man, I hate those people. They're like the worst." And God was like, "Nah." They're ready for you now, Patrick. Go over there and convert them. So he did. He went over and like village by village, convened because he knew the way they lived and he knew somewhat about their culture and their pagan traditions. He was able to weave the, Catholic traditions with pagan traditions and convert the island, as it were.
There was a moment here, Abigail, where I felt like I was in the middle of a drunk history, you know, and it's like, hey, Patrick, so Ireland.
I have a great story. I actually told a story about St. Patrick converting a specific Irish chieftain, and it won me a trip to Ireland with a whiskey company. So, yeah, no, I have a great story about Patrick. Patrick, as it were. Patrick, if you could say it with my Irish accent, no, there. Patrick. Ah, Patrick, you're a good fella, yeah.
But God wouldn't have had an Irish accent. because he has no accent.
No, God has no accent. But I like the idea that Patrick had an Irish accent, even though he wasn't Irish, that he was No.
Well, it sounds like he would have had a French accent.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. So
Latin. So, he spoke a lot of Latin.
Right. With a French accent. And by 1631, St. Patrick's Day is an official religious feast day. Now, in Ireland, it was celebrated as one would celebrate other religious feast days, and you would go to Mass.
Yes,
indeed. And there was no, it was not a public holiday in Ireland until 1904. There was no parades, no public events, and that is what St. Patrick's Day was in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Until the 20th century, which is a time of the Troubles. Actually, 19th and 20th. Well, okay. So actually, like the entire history of Ireland and its relationship.
It's full of troubles. Yeah, okay.
But the point is that in the early 20th century,
yes.
Yeah, you begin to have, it's still a somber celebration, but it is, there's Mass in the morning, but it's punctuated with, there's a military parade after Mass, and that's from the 20s to the 50s. And then later, the military parade will be replaced by a more general parade with floats, and that's like the 1960s, which is something that we would kind of recognize. But of note is that all bars were closed on St. Patrick's Day until the 1960s because officials feared that people would get too rowdy and not treat it with the solemnity that it deserved.
That is the same reason why when I lived in Ireland, we would attend midnight Mass on Christmas at 10 p.m. because people would be too loaded for the midnight Mass. So you had to have it a little bit earlier.
Oh, man. Well, the New Orleanians are very good at midnight Mass then, because we still do it at midnight. I don't go because it's too crowded. But it's not until 1966 that there's this big old St. Patrick's Day festival that you can go to, because the Irish government realized, like, oh, we could have a totally
premier St. Patrick's Day festival.
Exactly. Well, that's not until 1996. So what is it that makes St. Patrick's Day so popular here? Become this thing we understand it as, and it's totally in America.
Yeah.
And it's Irish immigrants who were not welcomed, who were looked upon as lesser citizens because of their religion and their accents, and they were perceived as being drunks and lots of other things. And so they individually in neighborhoods, particularly in New York, but not only, also in New Orleans, Savannah, Boston, you know, all these other major Port cities, mm-hmm. they would have these small celebrations. Because why? St. Patrick, he's the national patron saint of Ireland. So like, that's a good day for us to celebrate being Irish. And eventually, it's in New York where several of these groups decide to get together. And then they have a larger parade. And that's like the first official parade as we understand St. Patrick's Day being celebrated. And that's, and to me, I was like, it kind of reminded me of gay pride parades. Mm-hmm. This public show of solidarity and all this mass of people being like, we're all here and you can't ignore us and we're proud of who we are and we're going to march down the street in this very public way and be excited to be Irish.
The irony being the New York Irish parade has a history of not letting gay people march in it.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
there was
right.
Great controversy about that. Yeah. But meanwhile in Ireland, they've made gay marriage legal.
Gay marriage is legal here now too.
For now. Yeah. They've made a lot of progress in a short period of time. I lived, full disclosure, I lived in Ireland for 2 years. I have family there. I am definitely what they would call a Hibernophile. Mm-hmm. I love all things Irish, and I'm very proud of my Irish heritage and very proud of my Irish relatives and the history and everything that they've gone through. And I think it's one of the most beautiful places on the planet. And I really, really love Ireland. So
it really is.
I don't
beautiful.
Always love Irish American traditions. I am a little snotty about that. I'm a little wary of worshiping something so blindly. That being said, I still worship and love my Irish heritage, but I understand the complex nature of it.
Well, one Irish American tradition that I think is interesting is that corned beef and cabbage has like become the default dish mm-hmm. of the day. It is something that was not particularly popular in Ireland, but it wasn't popular because meat is expensive. This is yeah. the same as there are Italian American dishes that are popular that are here that are not popular in Italy. And it's yeah. because meat was so much cheaper or people had more money and they could afford it. And so yeah. you have this transformation of a nation's culinary palate as those folks leave one place and bring their ideas about eating to a new place, but then they encounter either new ingredients or affordable ingredients. Mm-hmm. And I remember so I speak Italian with varying degrees of success, and I was watching a video of, you know, like to practice listening to Italian. And it was a woman talking about how chicken parmesan is not an Italian dish. And, you know, she said, and this is right. So like, if you're walking the streets of Rome and you see chicken parmesan on a menu, you shouldn't go there because it's geared for tourists. Okay. So that's useful information.
Yes.
But then she just went on and on about how it's not real. And I'm like, actually, well, it is real because it exists on a plate and you can order it, you can eat it. But it is real for all of those Italians who came to America and they were like, oh, I can afford chicken. I don't have to use eggplant because that's what she's like,
yeah.
eggplant, parmesan, that's real. Yeah. And so the corned beef and cabbage, I was looking at, it's interesting because I was looking at an Irish website talking about St. Patrick's Day and they were like, oh, corned beef and cabbage, that's not Irish. I'm like, well, it's definitely Irish American and there's a reason because
yeah.
Y'all used to, there was a, for Irish families who were so poor, they would have a piece of meat, salt pork, like in the middle of the table, and they would spear their potato and they would like touch the pork to just like get like a little, like how you rub garlic on bruschetta, mm-hmm. like get a little bit of flavor. They would just point their vegetable at it, their cabbage or their potato, because there wasn't even enough meat to just like have everybody even have like a little bit of taste, but, you know? So yeah. that is, it's the evolution of a country story and yeah. part of that evolution happened here.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Great deal of Irish American heritage here.
The other thing that is notable is a lot of this idea of like, the Irish acknowledging that there's power in numbers and coming into power in their communities is a lot of that activity happens in bars mm-hmm. As third places. And it's the in the 19th century when these groups decide to get together, it's because they were all in different neighborhoods and they were like, all right, we're going to bring let's unite. And I read, there's a man.
That was a lot of political power attached to that too, like exactly, Tammany Hall. And
exactly. And some good, some corrupt and some, you know, not yeah. corrupt, but there's
it's community action though. And they did do good for their constituents.
Yes. There is a book that I'm going to put in the notes that I learned a lot of this information from, and it's called The Wearing of the Green, A History of St. Patrick's Day. And it's two authors, Mike Cronin and Daryl Adair, and they used an expression that I wanted to make sure that I said in here that I thought was really cool. They said that St. Patrick's Day is the closest thing in America to National Immigrant Day, a tribute not only to the Irish, but to the idea that Americans are all part other.
Oh, that I do like that. And I do love when I see other, I love when people, everyone wears bags that's, you know, buttons that say, kiss me, I'm Irish. Mm-hmm. You know, that one day everybody's Irish and they celebrate that. And it's, they're celebrating the other. So I love it when other people who aren't Irish celebrate. I mean, really, honestly, according to my DNA, I'm only 11% Irish anyway. So very happy. Enough.
And he also says it's why the holiday was slower to take off among the Irish diaspora in other nations around the world, where people are less comfortable with hyphenated identities. So on St. Patrick's Day, if you want to drink Irish whiskey, Abigail, let's talk a little about what people, if you want to like get out of your comfort zone and maybe you don't have a comfort zone at all. Maybe let's talk about Irish whiskey. Oh, just like what it is first.
Irish whiskey,
American and Scotch and all that.
Oh yeah. So there, what initially makes Irish whiskey Irish is that it is made in Ireland, just like Scotch.
Number one.
Number one, you cannot really call it Irish whiskey if it is not made in Ireland. That being said, there's a lot of things that look familiar with the production of Irish whiskey. They use a variety of grain. They use mostly barley, malted barley and unmalted barley, and corn. And they blend it together. Now, and they also age it in barrels, now mostly used whiskey, bourbon barrels, but they will do barrel finishes with other barrels, like in sherry casks, cider casks, port casks, wine casks. The Irish whiskey was, for a brief time in the 1900s, the most popular whiskey in the world.
That's right.
It's got a very flavorful palate. It's a little bit sweeter than some other whiskeys. It's a little mellow and smooth. It goes down really nice and easy. The Irish have said to have learned the art of distilling very, very early. So they've had a lot of practice with it. And there is a lot of tradition in the monasteries of making this as medicine. So they've been making whiskey a really long time and they had learned to make it quite palatable. Plus it's an agrarian paradise in Ireland. This is a country that has skipped the Industrial Revolution. There are no towns in Ireland that look like Cleveland or Pittsburgh or Birmingham. And you know, I could mean Birmingham, England, as well as Birmingham, Alabama. And it is, the water is clean.
Meaning that they are absent this industrial sort of factory model. Yes. Yeah. Not because they're ugly or anything like these other cities.
No. And because of that, their water stayed very clean and very pure. Their air is very pure. And they do not have some of the environmental negative issues that other countries have due to this unrestrained industrial growth that happened in the 19th and 20th century.
Even if you think you've got it all figured out and you're the most popular whiskey in the world, you can still screw it up.
And, absolutely. There was a series of unfortunate events that led to the demise of Irish whiskey. Elizabeth is going to go over the main one. I'm just going to touch upon, you know, the usual World War One, Irish Rebellion, Irish Civil War, Prohibition, and then a desperate Irish government that overtaxed the production of whiskey. But that taxation problem was happening even before when the English were in charge. That's the reason why they changed their blends. That reason why that there's unmalted barley and malted barley or sometimes no malted barley at all in an Irish whiskey blend is because they would tax the malted barley. So mm-hmm. in order to save money, they started using corn, which was introduced to them during the famine by Native Americans, brought corn over to Ireland and taught them how to grow it and cook it and eat it. And then they, of course, distilled it.
Right.
And then... and that helped them get around some of the tax collectors. But please tell us the real main reason. And if you've watched shows like Peaky Blinders or Boardwalk Empire, you may get an idea of why this was an issue. But go ahead and tell them the biggest reason Scotch whiskey supplanted Irish whiskey is popular.
Before I do that, I want to give all the credit to, there is a podcast series that I linked to in one of my newsletters last year, and I will put it in the show notes. And it's short. It's like 6 episodes. Each episode is like 40 minutes, which is the exact amount of time that you should spend sipping on a dram. Mm-hmm. And so that's 6 drams or 8 drams, whatever. The point is, it's not very long, and it's the history of Irish whiskey. And it takes you through how Irish whiskey almost went out of business. And it's all of the reasons that Abigail listed. But the one that really made things difficult was Prohibition. Irish whiskey was the most popular whiskey in America. And Prohibition makes it complicated for not only because it's prohibited, okay, but the Scots were, because they were part of the British Commonwealth, had a much cozier relationship with Canada and Barbados and other places in the Caribbean that were smuggling liquor into America. So the Scots could get their scotch to Canada or Barbados or Bermuda or whatever much more easily than the Irish could get their whiskey. All right. So even though, because we all know, even though it was prohibition, everybody was still drinking. Or maybe not everybody. Okay. The temperance, the prohibitionists were definitely not drinking. But you know what I mean?
Like, a lot of people were still drinking.
And yes. So that really surprised, I thought that was very interesting. And the other thing that was interesting is that the Scots adopted the use of a sealed bottle much earlier. Now, granted, you can unseal the bottle and you can do whatever you want with it. And then you can like put some more wax on it and seal it back up again. But it is a little more work. So the Scots were sending their scotch in bottles, which meant that there was a higher probability that when you were buying scotch, you were buying actual scotch, like 100% whiskey, not diluted, not colored, not other stuff added to it. And the Irish were, what whiskey they could get into America, they were sending in barrels. And I mean, at that point, everybody's cutting everything, you know, and diluting it and adding colors and stuff. And so what emerges after Prohibition is, number one, they had a market that went away, and then it really went away because they couldn't even sneak in there. And what little they could sneak, people were like, oh, this stuff is terrible.
Yeah.
And so by the end, they thought Irish whiskey tastes awful and scotch is great and or better or reliable, you know, or whatever. And it is, and that is how, like, that's where Irish whiskey found itself in the 30s. World War II didn't help.
It was really devastating. I was actually reading about the demise of Irish whiskey on a plane once. And you know how, I don't know if it's the oxygen or something, but you're already kind of emotionally heightened on a plane. Yeah. And then I'm also listening to my music and an Elliott Smith song came on while I'm reading about the demise of Irish whiskey. And on a plane, I couldn't take it. I just broke down into big, giant sobs. And I'm like choking and sobbing and crying. And the guy and a stranger next to me tapped me on the shoulder and asked me if I was okay. And I just turned to him and I was just like, all that Irish whiskey is gone. There is just so much of it. Now it's gone. And he was like, okay. cranky. I was like, I can't explain why I'm like so upset by this at this moment, but I really am. I was kind of devastated that there was this like thriving culture of beautiful, varied Irish whiskeys, and then all of a sudden there was nothing. What happens in the 40s, 50s, and 60s is that they basically all consolidate into one distillery that is operating, you know, all three companies become the Irish Distillers Association. You have Paddy's, Powers, and Jameson all form as one.
They also did that because there was this Scottish Distillers Association. So they're like looking at like, okay, how can we compete in this new market?
New situation? And this is the way things were going in the middle of the 20th century. And they also made a decision. They were like, okay, we think we know the American palate, and the American palate likes Jameson. So that's what we're going to focus all our energy on. And that's why if you only, you know, if Jameson is the only Irish whiskey you've ever had in America, that is why they made a conscious decision that your palate would like Jameson. And you know what? It was kind of, I guess it was a good decision.
Smart. Yeah.
They were smart because you do. It's good. And now people think that that's what Irish whiskey should taste like. And because of that, a lot of Irish whiskey still just tastes like Jameson. And the reason for that is because a lot of Irish whiskey is still coming out of just that one distillery, Middleton Distillery in County Cork in Ireland, which is where Jameson is made, also still makes, I think, about 95%, or at least makes some of the distillate that goes into at least 95% of the Irish whiskey that's on the market there. So you may be seeing a whole bunch of new bottles, but just like how, if you remember our rye whiskey, when we talked about in Indiana, the giant former Seagram's plant that is pumping out tons of whiskey. It doesn't mean the whiskey's bad. It just means it is coming from one place and you have a lot of different people bottling it and picking out their own special flavors from it. And the same thing has happened with Irish whiskey. There is new distilleries kind of growing all the time. And the Celtic Tiger that I was a part of, the first Celtic Tiger, and now the second one that seems to be kind of happening for Irish whiskey, is leading to more distilleries being opened. But as we know, it takes a good number of years for that whiskey to age.
Because it's not vodka or gin.
Yeah. It's not vodka or gin.
Which are they making any Irish gin? It seems like they should.
Yes, they
right?
are. Yeah. In my hometown, my great grandmother's hometown, Drumshambo in County Leitrim, is home to a distillery now, and they're making Drumshambo gunpowder tea Irish gin, and it is glorious. I love it. I love that this is also like so more European. Like while they're waiting for their whiskey, they're not pumping out a vodka. They're pumping out a gin because gin is far more popular in Europe. And it is a delicious gin. If you see it, it's a beautiful blue bottle. Pick up a bottle and think of my great grandmother, Teresa Gilmartin, who braved the sail over to New York, worked as a maid in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City on the site where the Empire State Building stands now. And she met a handsome barman named Arthur Charbonneau, who was an immigrant from Montreal. And that union brought my grandfather, Vincent, into the world. And he's the one that taught me how to make a Manhattan, because that was the hot drink that his dad used to make at the Waldorf Astoria. So there's the line that you could travel from my Irish relative. But I tell you, I'm so excited for all my family that is still there that they have this beautiful distillery. And I can't wait to go and visit them and see all my little nieces and nephews that they all have, because they're so good at making babies, beautiful ones at that. And they're so good at making beautiful whiskey too. So I can't wait to go back to Ireland and enjoy both.
Sounds like one of those brands needs to have some kind of contest that you can win.
So another one.
So you can get over there. Yeah.
You know, when I left Ireland and moved back to New York, I thought, oh, I'm going to go back all the time because I just love it. It's home. And it took me 6-7 years to go back. And since then, I've only been able to go back thanks to the generosity of some brands. But every chance I get to go home to Ireland, I do. And every time I land, I tell you, I do feel like I'm home, you know, even more so than any other place. It just feels right when I'm there.
That's lovely. Well, I have only been to Ireland once, but I have a very vivid memory of the plane arriving and looking down, and everything is green. Like it is just this patchwork of green. And so you think it's green. People say, you know, you're like, oh yeah, yeah, okay, whatever. The green, but totally, it's all green. Can't get away from it.
There's so many. I thought when I visited Scotland, I felt like it would look the same, but it doesn't. And suddenly I began to see like why the paintings of Scottish artists and Irish artists, landscape artists are different. You know, Scotland has more like grays and blues and like rust colored soil. Yes. And Ireland is just green, so much different shades of green and blue sky and blue water and green.
So for those of you who are in the camp that Abigail described, as when you think of Irish whiskey, you think of Jameson, totally mm-hmm. reasonable.
Yes.
But when I have thought of Irish whiskey until I entered this world, to me, it was consumed as a boiler maker because that is like Lee loved that. Lee used to love to order High Life and a Jameson back because it was $5 at the R Bar, and you could go there and I guess for like $10 more, you could get a haircut. I mean, it was a very
That's still a great deal.
So now it's $6. But that's okay because it's 10 years later. I mean, this is true.
Yeah, it's true. 10 years later, it's $6 for a Jameson and a High Life.
But that's how I think a lot of people are used to drinking Irish whiskey. And if you are looking in American cocktail books from the past or the present, well, usually the past they'll just say whiskey. But our assumption or the thing we're used to putting in cocktails is American whiskey. It's bourbon or rye. Mm-hmm. But Irish whiskey can be lovely in a cocktail. Or not, maybe it's certainly not as challenging as saying, say, like a super peaty Islay scotch, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah,
it shows up in a couple of classics like the Tipperary, which is a Manhattan variation with some chartreuse in it, is quite delicious. It's got wonderful notes of nutmeg and vanilla and apple. Like there's so many different notes you could play off of it. I love like fresh squeezed apple juice. And Irish whiskey is so, so good. If you have a juicer, that is like a really, really delicious way to do it. Irish coffee.
Wait. Or, okay, it's Lent, right? So somebody you know is not only not drinking alcohol, but they're probably doing like the Whole 30 or some kind of keto thing. There's a cleanse. Someone you know is using the word cleanse. So go with them to a juice bar and let them order their spinach, what's that grass stuff?
Wheatgrass.
Whatever.
Yeah, cucumber.
And then you say, I would just like
a fresh apple juice.
And then you pull out your flask. Pour it in your Irish whiskey. And
this sounds like the kind of thing that I have done at Satsuma. This a juice bar in New Orleans, y'all. If you don't know, I have definitely gone to Satsuma and with my flask and added some booze to a delicious fresh pressed juice.
Somebody please do that. Because if you follow my Instagram, last week I was a celebrity bartender at an event to help support victims of domestic violence. And my friend Lisa Piccone, so because it's the Friday after Mardi Gras, there was a mocktail and then there was like a regular tale. So you could come and get a Moscow Mule with, you know, it was like a variation or this like spritzer thing. And Lisa ordered the spritzer with vodka. And that became the go-to. People were like, this is delicious.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, they're like, I would like this fruit spritzer with vodka. And that felt very New Orleans to me. But yes, okay. Oh my God, please, somebody.
Somebody go to a fancy juice bar. We don't recommend, do it if it's illegal, we should say. We're really excited because that's actually very legal to do in New Orleans, right. But not so much in other places. So if you get the juice, maybe you bring it home.
No, the whole point is you do it. I just like the idea of doing it in front of your friend and the entire juice bar employee group.
Oh, don't get the juice bar employees in trouble, Elizabeth.
Okay, all right. No, I just...
You can only use the "I'm from New Orleans" excuse like once before you get arrested.
Subversive, anti-cleanse attitude. No, you know what you could do?
Oh, white lady privilege right now.
You could tell them, okay, I'm acknowledging that. No, it's not even white lady privilege. It's New Orleans privilege. I live in this environment. And so yes, I forget.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, juice
you forget
bars,
that you get in trouble for stuff like
juice
that.
Juice bar is white lady privilege, but the pouring of liquor in public is just New Orleans privilege. But what you could do is, if you remember in our love potions episode, that a lot of those things are alcohol based, but people are selling them on Etsy as a tonic. And that's so true. You can just tell people, like Kim Kardashian had to put her 12 dashes of love, of self-love, into her water glass. So
that's
you could just you could put your ounce and a half of self-love tonic.
Whoa.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Okay. I may have to go do this. Who else is going to? I think there's New Orleans listeners in here. There are New Orleans podcast listeners, not only in other places, but maybe in other parts of the world where it's a little more legal.
Yeah.
Maybe Ireland. Sure. Is public drinking legal there? Or could you
there's an off license. Like you could definitely like buy a beer and then take it out. And it's not, I don't know. When I was living in New Orleans and was used to getting drinks to go, I kept ordering Irish coffees to go and people were like very accommodating to that. So that was nice. I forgot about that.
Yes.
Irish coffees, Irish cream. Again, the milk is lovely in Ireland. Those cows, they're right there, right out the window. You can see the cows. So, you know, the milk. Right out there.
So I think that would be all right. So that would be great. But I will get Abigail to, you should tell us one recipe. She's recording this at home and we're not even going to pretend that she's making a drink, because she just moved into her new condo. Very exciting. Almost nothing is unpacked. So I'm not going to make her go find a shaker. But why don't you tell us a good, easy recipe, and I'll put it in the show notes. So people can make it. If they want a nice drink for St. Patrick's Day. So it may be something batchable or maybe something just for your own happy Hibernia loving self. But something that's not green beer.
No, not green beer. I actually have a beautiful Hibernia punch that I really like. Speaking of batching, you find that. This is from I have a blog that I'm very bad about keeping up with, but it's great for searching some recipes, because when I first started messing around with recipes and cocktails, rather than write it down, because I'm not so good with keeping tracks of pieces of paper or notebooks, but I was able to kind of contribute to my blog. I put a lot of those up there. It's called the Irish Channel Punch. The Irish Channel is a neighborhood in New Orleans, and it was known for the Irish immigrants that settled there. And it uses Satsuma. Satsuma is a local Louisiana citrus that is in season in the fall. It's a bright, bitter citrus, and it's a good match with the golden spiciness of Irish whiskey.
You can't get a Satsuma. You could get a tangerine
clementines or even orange juice. Just make sure it's kind of fresh. So we're going to make an oleosacrium out of that, just with lemon peels and the peels from the whatever orange citrus you use, and to kind of toss the zest with some turbinado sugar and muddle and let it sit for about an hour. And then you add about 8 ounces of the citrus juice, 8 ounces of lemon juice, about 8 ounces of, you should be use about 8 ounces of sugar that's with the peels, and then use like a nice strong black tea. If you could find a nice Irish breakfast tea, that would be perfect. Mm-hmm.
So this is a waking up punch, everybody.
Yeah. So make a nice strong tea, about a liter's worth, and then use about a liter's worth of Irish whiskey. And, then I used like to use a little, rose water, which you can get in a lot of, Middle Eastern stores will have rose water. You could order it online, of course, as well. So just a couple dashes of that. Use it like you would use bitters. Just kind of, and gives it a nice kind of floral note that goes nice with it. And then, of course, fresh grated nutmeg on top, and you've got yourself a nice, delicious punch. If you look up the Irish Channel Punch on my blog, Rye Girl,
I'll put a link to it.
Yeah, and it has a little Amer Javert in there as well, which is a bitter orange and cinnamon liqueur. There's only about 2 ounces in it. So it's, if you don't have it, you could use some, if you have some Amaro lying around, I would use just 2 ounces of Amaro, or if you can even use a little Aperol or Campari if you have that as well, just kind of gives it a little bit more body and fun. But yeah, mostly this is an Irish tea and Irish whiskey punch with some fresh citrus, and it's, a good waking up punch. Yeah. Before you go out and hit the parades. If you haven't been to New Orleans for their St. Patrick's Day parade, one of my favorite parts about it is they, aside from the usual kind of Mardi Gras throws of cups and beads and toys, they also throw ingredients for a stew. Mm-hmm. You could get smacked in the head with a cabbage.
Yeah, watch out.
Potatoes and carrots. That's like one of my favorite traditions of, yeah, and then you just take it home and you cook it. That's a useful, not wasteful Mardi Gras throw.
Yeah, this is a big thing in Mardi Gras now about everything being useful. And so that's super useful. No one, however, is throwing corned beef. So
no,
you don't have to worry about.
You still have to save up your money. You have to save up your money and buy your own beef, guys. Or a good roast. From living in Ireland, they do the Sunday roast, I'd say.
Yeah.
The pot roast or chicken roast on Sundays is good.
Mm, yeah.
I still crave those sometimes on a Sunday night.
Well, you can make roast. It. Or yeah. I'm sure there's got to be somewhere in Seattle you can go for a roast.
So, yeah, keep in mind that there are, you know, we didn't really talk about the whiskey so much,
we did. We talked about what it tastes like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Bushmills single malt, if it's original.
Oh, you mean other whiskeys besides
whiskeys. Yes, besides Jameson. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll just quickly go over, there's been a lot of distilleries since the late 80s and 90s that have opened up, and they've in Ireland, kind of bringing this new wave of Irish whiskey. And a lot of them have already been bought up by international corporations like Suntory and Beam and Diageo. But Bushmills is still in operation in the north. It is... it was basically too small for them to even bother with, which is why it's kind of survived. Plus the fact that it was in Northern Ireland and not in the Republic. But that is a beautiful distillery to visit. They make all of their single malt there. And if they, for their blends, they actually get distillate from Middleton and truck it up. So if you hear people complain about, oh, I don't drink Bushmills, that's the Protestant whiskey, that's a load of hooey. Besides, I think all of Ireland is going to be united soon anyway, thanks to Brexit.
Yeah,
it's just going to be inevitable now. I have also been to the Tullamore Distillery in Tullamore, Ireland, which is right in the center of Ireland, the Kansas of Ireland, and
that should be their new handle, right? The Kansas of Ireland.
No, this. The Tullamore Distillery was the most important thing in that. And then they lost it. So imagine their joy that it is back, thanks to William Grant and Sons. Right. And it is a gorgeous distillery. What I like about it is they built it. So, you know, they do intend, of course, to make money very soon with it, but they also intend this distillery to stand for another 100 or 200 years. And it is quite beautiful, and that's worth a trip as well. I've been to the Middleton Distillery, which is quite gorgeous as well. And when I lived in Dublin, I actually lived in the old Jameson Distillery. I lived where they were still, you know, it was a rick house storing whiskey until the 80s, and then they turned it into my apartment building. And I used to joke, and we had these beautiful stone walls. I would press myself up against them and swear I could still smell the whiskey in the walls and how beautiful it was. So I was very lucky for 2 years that I got to live in an old Jameson distillery and feel the spirit of all the spirits that were there before me.
Did you like the walls?
I probably one night. It was I was very young, and I drank a lot when I lived in Ireland.
I was also thinking that if like the whiskey is oozing from the walls, that's like a very, it's like horror movie, but not horror. Everybody's like, this is great. Or like the statues that cry, you know, and it's the miracle.
Whiskey. It's a miracle. There's whiskey coming out of the walls.
Yeah. So there are more whiskeys than Jameson out there for you to try. Yes. And if you, if you can find them, then that's great. And if you want to use one of them in this, Irish Channel Punch, you totally should. And, I guess we can all raise a toast to our unofficial National Immigrant Day when, we're all Irish. Which means that on any day, we could all be fill in the blank of whatever, of all the folks that came here from somewhere else. And I think that that's a really, amid the rivers that are dyed green and the soggy, sodden people who are decked out in beads or t-shirts or shamrocks, you know, whatever, and the old men kissing young men, young men, young women with like for a flower, and like, among all of these things that happen, which, for some people who still see St. Patrick's Day as a religious holiday, it does irk them a little bit, but we can give it our own kind of gravitas, which is seeing it as National Immigrant Day. I really like thinking about it that way.
Yeah,
I do too. So if anybody makes the punch, we want to hear about it on social media. But you could also, you know, I don't know, how else would you let us know? You could call me. My phone number's on the website, probably. But but it would be better if you like let us know with a picture and stuff.
Yeah. So you can join the Drink and Learn Revelers on Facebook. We put that there.
If you have any questions, you can message me or Abigail. I'm at Drink and Learn across all social media. And Abigail?
My name is Abigail Gullo, G-U-L-L-O, on Instagram and at NYC Baby on Twitter.
And we would love to hear from you and love to hear how you have chosen to celebrate your St. Patrick's Day. And until then, I hope everyone has a wonderful Lent. Cheers, y'all.
Sláinte, y'all.